Watching somebody on YouTube doing a burst fade may get you a couple of hits on Facebook, but it actually isn't going to bring the clients in, get them in your seat and make them stay there. I mean, that's what we do in salons.
Are you working today? Do you ever get that? Mm-hmm. Are you off today? Mm-hmm. Like, I f***ing start when I wake up and I stop when I go to sleep. Being in business is relentless.
When people go into a restaurant or they go to it for a beauty salon, I've just been to the dentist today. We never question why they put their prices up, but it's always a question in our industry because we don't believe in ourselves.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laband. And we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laband. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm here in Belfast and I'm here in Paul Stafford's beautiful building. Thank you very much for hosting us here, Paul. Appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure to have you here and it's a pleasure to have Neil here.
And we have Neil Toner. How many stores have you now opened?
We have four stores in Northern Ireland.
So, you know, this great growing business that's still continuing to grow and change. So really wanted to take this first opportunity to really talk about business. I mean, we're seeing so many changes. There's lots of kind of concerns about how things are growing, how businesses take off. We're seeing a lot of sole barbershops wanting to become multiples, and there's probably a fair few multiples out there
wanting to be soles.
And we're seeing, you know, we're seeing lots of changes coming through. So I think it's a really good opportunity, you know, from your point of view, Paul. You know, like myself, we've been through a lot. And how do you see business working today compared to 30 years ago when we started?
I mean, it's completely different. If you think about 30, 40 years ago, the industry, you know, was just starting to enjoy not just a very high profile, but it was starting to be considered a professional industry. You know, we were talking about standards, we were talking about training. And it really was about bringing people into the industry and giving them that opportunity to enjoy a fulfilled career that not only paid good money, but give them creative opportunities, give them the opportunity to, you know, potentially learn the skills to become salon owners themselves. So we can't be angry that that's come full circle. Anybody who doesn't want people in their salons to be not as successful as they are shouldn't really be employing or running salons, because we all came from somewhere. I mean, my ex-bosses were all incredible people and I stayed friends with them all my life because they gave me such great opportunities and wonderful places to work, and they taught me amazing things. They put me on stage. They showed me great tools. So, you know, I've always been very kind of happy that, you know, yeah, sometimes when people leave, it's a little bit like a family member, you know, leaving, or it's a bereavement because, you know, you're not going to see that person every day. But I think the anger that's within the industry with regards to people doing their own thing, it's not all unjustified. I think there are elements of it that, you know, that we have to sort of explore and discuss and acknowledge that, you know, the fraction between where the industry was 30 years ago and how the industry looks today has to be examined and assessed. What is good for our industry moving forward? This desire to almost push salons off the high street is not only detrimental, it's unfair and it's dangerous. And we can talk a lot more about that. Now, I think, you know, 30 years ago, we wanted the industry to grow. We wanted there to be more salons. We wanted to be more successful hairdressers. We wanted the standards to be higher. And I think there is an element, there is a dumbing down of the industry that has been, that's been led by manufacturers, been led by social media, it's been led by the industry, the press, and it's also been led by hairdressers themselves who think that they can come down the Thames or the Liffey or the Ligon in a bubble and just suddenly be this fully formed, incredible entrepreneurial hairdresser. So that's the difference.
Setting fires in our own house.
I think so. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I mean, a lot of what you're saying there feels very much what's happening in the barbering industry now. You know, the amount of conversations I have about, you know, about formalizing the education, formalizing this, and this kind of the conversations are about professionalism. But that's not always the reflection you see through the industry. I mean, from your point of view, how have you seen your business is now
15 years
sorry. This year. Yeah,
my research letting me down again.
Yeah,
but you know, you must see changes in not just the barbering industry in 15 years, but your business and your outlook.
Yeah, yeah. From a salon, we would only be going in one direction. You know, if I'm being totally honest, we started out barbering would be deemed unprofessional from a standards, and it's not licensed in the UK.
No.
So from a company standpoint, yeah, like I was very young. I had the backing of my father, which was very inspirational to me to get into business, but I didn't really know what I was about. I didn't have any identity as a brand. I didn't understand how to put in systems and processes. I never knew how to look at, you know, if we're not busy enough, how do we look at generating new clientele? There was no processes backed. So from a brand, we've only went one way for sure. The industry, unfortunately, I think maybe went the opposite way. And that's kind of like where the fire is in my belly, you know, to be sitting here today with Paul, who, when Paul's talking, to look at him and watch him and characteristics and mannerisms and how he articulates conversation. I think as a barbering industry, you know, we've lost all of that, whatever there was when I joined the industry. I joined and I looked up to a couple of real kind of trailblazers in Northern Ireland at the time in barbering, and we unfortunately have, you know, sort of lost them. So I think that's our position. That's what we're striving towards.
But it's hard to gain yourself that position when the underlying concern that I speak to every barbershop about is, as you were saying, that it's almost like a betrayal. What's the point? They're going to go up the road. All I'm doing is trying to up my chair share to
Anthony. Vidal Sassoon said something amazing. That I always sticks with me. And this is someone once said to him, look, Vidal, why do you train all these people and they go and they leave you and they open up their own salons? He said, what if I didn't train them and they stayed?
Yeah.
And you know, for me,
that's a lovely line.
You know,
Anthony, I spoke to you about this the other day. You know, there's a lot of negativity in the industry at the minute. And for me, at first it hurts me because it's the industry that I love and it's what I'm passionate about. And you know, it's where I spend my life pretty much. But I don't choose to see the industry that way. And that's not being naive or having the blinkers on. We get up every day, we have the same amount of hours every day, and we get to choose what we think about. And I want to find solutions and not sit and look at the problems. I want to find the
but
positivity.
It's collective, isn't it? I mean, as you're saying, I mean, I've now trained, you know, and I'm sure you even more so, I've changed, you know, tens of it. I've probably taken from my career about maybe 20 odd hairdressers minimum that I've qualified off and have gone on to have great careers. There are three that are still with me, and I'm quite excited about that. And I, you know, and it does feel now though that there's not a great deal of young people that have been trained well. So if we're looking to bring people in, we've got to bring them in from the beginning, and we've got to train them ourselves. They're not arriving. Because people are seeming to really look at holding back on that training.
Well, when you came earlier and we were having a look at the salon, and I told you on Saturday, I said this salon was filled with people that we've trained in the last 2 years, people that we've taken from scratch and, you know, and believed in them, mentored them, educated them. We trained them in salon. We did, you know, we don't rely on the colleges, and I have no problem with the colleges. But it was just that we have a standard, we have a set idea of how we want our staff to work, how they behave, how they speak, how they articulate what they say to their clients. And I stood there, my daughters were in the salon working on Saturday, my wife standing beside me. It's a real family atmosphere. Amazing. And every seat, the salon was buzzing. Plus, we've also brought in some senior people who want to work differently. And that's added a different dynamic to the business. You know, they've got the experience, they've worked in other salons, and they bring this other energy. So for me, you know, I think that when people talk about education, what they talk about is technique and skill. That isn't hair education. That is learning your craft.
Yeah.
When you're being trained in a salon, you're being trained to communicate. You've been trained to act as a team member. You've been trained to think on your feet. You learn economics. You're a scientist. I know people talk about this all the time. Watching somebody on YouTube doing a burst fade may get you a couple of hits on Facebook, but it actually isn't going to bring the clients in, get them in your seat and make them stay there. And that's what we do in salons. Mm.
See, Paul, see your salon over the years, how do you see that changing from, you know, when you were very much in the forefront and a lot of traveling to what it is today?
Oh, I mean, it's very, very simple. I think when I wasn't here, the salon was weaker.
Okay.
I genuinely think that when I was standing in front of an audience in Chicago or New York, you know, taking all the plaudits for knocking out a cool wee haircut, I think that the salon missed that energy and that strength that, you know, salon owners have, and they're only useful when they're in the salon. Since the pandemic, I've dedicated myself to working in the salon full time, 9 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock at night. It's the best thing I ever did. I mean, don't get me wrong. The profile of the salon and that energy that comes with doing interesting things like the alternative hair show or, you know, podcasts or seminars. But my attitude has changed.
Yeah.
And I'm only interested in live hairdressing.
Oh, nice one.
I'm only interested in, if I can't do it in front of an audience live or I can't do it in front of my staff live, don't ask me to do it on YouTube where it's going to be edited to make me look good. I'm not interested in that. Yeah. I want to do raw rock and roll, proper. It's real hairdressing with the glitches and the uncertainties and the nuances that come with real hair. That's what I love. Mm.
And that's how people, ultimately a byproduct of that is when that's how people buy into you more. Mm. You know, when you get to
but
see the whole package.
How you end up going, you know, I like that full circle, if you like, in the fact that you start off behind the chair and then, you know, you have, you know, been around the planet a couple of times and done the shows and done the awards and so on. But actually at the core that you're loving it, you've come back to standing behind the, and I do. I you know, I absolutely love being behind the chair. And
Nobody starts out in hairdressing, you know, nobody starts out thinking, I'm only doing this so I can get in front of an audience in Orlando. Nobody does that. Neil hit it in the head. You know, the byproduct of working hard is success. And success, people think success is one of those things that you can just invent. Mm. But actually, truly successful people have worked really, really hard at it. And I think my success is pretty sketchy because it has come with some incredibly difficult decisions. When people look at you, as they think, oh, you know, he's won everything, he's done everything. They actually don't know the truth.
Mm. No.
And they will never know the truth. It's been harder than it's been fun.
Mm.
Yeah. I wouldn't change it. Yeah. But that's the truth.
Yeah. But I guess it's getting those scars. You know, we were talking earlier, you know, all those experiences are kind of wee scars that keep hitting and keep getting reopened. And then you finally kind of get to a point, I hope, where you can wear them with a bit of pride, or you can kind of realize that you've gained more from them than lost from them, I guess.
But isn't that where the more vulnerability we show? I think with the editorial work, you get a real crisp, clean, you know, product at the end, and that's great for education. But the truth is, and we spoke about it before, was that, like, you know, this industry is going to come back full to whoever can show up, be vulnerable. You know, if I tell you my challenges, you're going to understand and resonate with it on a deeper level than somebody who's flawless. When I got married, actually today is my wedding anniversary, so whenever I got married,
happy anniversary,
you know, there we go, what a time. I created this ring, and my dad's business was behind building the iconic Titanic building in the city centre. Oh. So this is called a facade ring, and there's a couple of what somebody might think of like ugly stones in it, but in truth is that is the ring of life. That's all of the different angles. There's success and failure. The law of polarity, you know, anxiety, doubt, fear, but in its entirety, it's beautiful. And that's what we need to celebrate. Celebrate this industry, celebrate who we are, celebrate this moment-to-moment awareness that, you know, we're getting lost. When I see my son went to his first barbering event yesterday, he's 13 years old, and I felt like it was safe and he wanted to go. So I was like, right, we'll see how this plays out. And, you know, guiding him into that and celebrating it for what it is. Mm. You know, it is an incredible industry where we can create massive impact in people's lives. Hopefully you'll make enough money that you can have enough free time to do what you like. And that's life. Mm. You know, it's not Instagram. That's
but
a byproduct.
Yeah, we've certainly seen, you know, our career was, you know, 20 years old before Instagram and social media popped up. And so ours was editorial.
And I think that's where barbering had the USP on us, because when the barbering thing took off, the great thing that they were doing, and I think they're losing it here, actually, And I think they have to be very careful. The great thing about barbering was the skill had to be seen live to be believed. You actually had to see these people. They've taken this core classic skill and they've made it modern and contemporary. And the wonderful thing, when I used to watch the first wave of barbers who came through 15, 20 years ago now, the interesting thing was seeing them do it live. They didn't come out with a model half done and they'd blow dry it and go, aren't I very clever? They actually were standing with the sweat beating off their foreheads going, I have to get this blend. I have to get this blend. And I think the risk that barbers have today is they're dumbing down the craft of the industry by doing these social media tutorials where, you know, you see them put the clippers in and then you see the finished result. And I actually think what they had on hairdressers was the fact that they carried the whole skill through from start to finish. Mm. And they need to be very careful because that was, for me, what not only inspired people, but it made us as an industry very envious.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we were looking at going, God, these people, we need to get up on our scissor or comb. We need to get learning. The hairdressing industry copied the barbering industry for almost a decade and didn't pay any credit, didn't give back. We just were looking at what they were doing. And when those androgynous shapes started to kick in the late 2008, 2009, we all had one eye on the barbers going, we're going to take what they have shown us and incorporate into our little foxy kind of fly haircuts and things like that. So it's the blurred lines are starting to be less blurred. And I think the crossover will be good, but I think there should be a distinct difference in terms of what the both skill sets offer.
Mm. I mean, you're certainly seeing, you know, I'm sure you have and presumably here, more education coming through for barbers that's long hair, that's layering, that's sectioning. Effectively, you know, relatively simple hairdressing techniques that have obviously always been based in a discipline and control of angles and so on, but become portrayed as quite a complex thing on social media.
Yeah.
As if kind of the beauty of the simplicity of barbering is something to hide. It's not really that easy. It's actually very complicated.
Mm. I think as salon owners, you know, really honing in on your zone of genius. If you want to be a barber, be the best fucking barber you can be. Mm. Be trained in beards, be trained in afros, be trained in long hair, short hair, texture cuts, blunt cuts. Be an expert and go hard on it. But what's happening right now with social media and mobile phones probably, period, is, you know, we've two eyes and we're trying to watch 10 things and we're trying to wear 10 hats, not as beautiful as Paul's. But, right, it's like, you know, getting clear, that's one of the things we do as a company is we get super clear on what every individual wants. We break down, actively break down herd mentality. None of this we think. It's what do you want? Mm. Because when you're here, it's super important to me that I take you towards that and not further away from it.
Mm. I mean, you're certainly seeing now much, much more. I mean, I think probably 15, 20 years ago, I started doing more. You know, I concentrated a bit more on Afro hair and really looked into that. You know, we had some great people in the hair industry that were really bringing Afro hair into the kind of limelight of fashion. Now in barbering, in the last, I don't know, maybe even just the last 2 or 3 years, I'm meeting more barbers who are, you know, Caucasian, you know, trained barbers that are suddenly working or retrained to do Afro. We're seeing more guys that can do long hair. And seeing it as a fully fledged craft, I guess.
Absolutely. And that's what we need. You know, when you look at ladies' hairstylists, like they're diverse in every angle. That's the side that I envy, you know, as an industry to industry. You know, we're all one. But if we were to divide them into two, that's what I want barbering to be. I want it to be the salon. I want salons fitted out like this. I want us to hold ourselves to that standard. Mm. But with that, the price has to go up. So we have to start being able to articulate price change to our clients. So we're speaking the unspoken word. There is that feeling between the barber and the client that's the same here in this very salon with Paul and his clients. But it's being able to articulate it so that we can continue year on year to put our price up more than just inflation. And it's what's scary to me is that some people don't put their price up. Some put it up less than inflation and very few price for profit. So that's what kind
of... The fear factor of price, I mean, I think that's probably one of the conversations that's said to me most times is, you know, I'm really busy. And I'm like, great, put your price up. Because that's what you do, isn't it? I mean, you know, I get busy. No. But, you know,
as an industry,
and they're charging, and I ask what they're charging, and I'm like, well, put your price up. If you put it up by 50% and lose 50% of your clients, you're exactly where you were. But this fear, we've had this conversation before about talking about kind of, you know, charging what that's costing you to do the haircut, and barber haircuts are stuck around the kind of 20 to 30 quid mark.
Yeah,
and it really is stuck there. And everyone's very nervous to move up to 40 or 50.
Pricing is a very, very interesting thing. And there's a lot of reasons why people charge what they charge and why they come to that price. And the one, the most obvious one is the one you just said, which is kind of, you know, I'm really busy. I've got, you know, I'm doing 50 clients a week and it's killing me. And I'd rather do 25 and charge double. And that's hoping that your client can afford that.
Yeah.
In this area, in Belfast, Northern Ireland, I don't see a 200 quid haircut coming anytime soon.
No.
I just don't see that. Mm. And I think we have to be realistic. I think actually in any salon, the person who's charging the most for a haircut is the person who probably shouldn't charge more. That's my view. Yeah. They probably are at the max, right? But I think with pricing, it's actually looking at the people in your salon who have that 20 to 25% area where they can still grow. And you can say, okay, you know, you could probably charge a bit. We could probably bring that back to 40%. Mm. And let's put the price up to get you a better type of clientele or a clientele that is more fitted to what your levels. But there are, coming back to that, I also think that we have to be realistic. Salons have to make money. Mm. And, you know, when people go into a restaurant or they go to it for a beauty salon, I've just been to the dentist today, we never question why they put their prices up. Mm. But it's always a question in our industry because we don't believe in ourselves. Mm. We actually don't think we're worth it ourselves.
Do you think part of it, Paul, is the frequency of visit? It's not an excuse, but you know, the frequency of visit is what a lot of barbers are struggling with, where this is kind of like clients become friends.
Yeah.
And then in that, confidence is lacking and the price doesn't go up.
Awkwardness of,
I think it's a brand.
Yeah. I do, Neil, and I do think, remember this, the client who's coming to, I'm led to believe that a barber client will come every 3 to 4 weeks.
Less, probably.
Okay, even less. Yeah. It is their choice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that's not an excuse. You can get in there.
You're not forcing them in every 3 to 4 weeks. It's how we value ourselves in general.
Absolutely.
And I think I've had to recently start to think differently. I've been out loads of times over the last 10, 15 years and people have come up to me in a party and they said, you know, you're the hairdresser, aren't you? And you go, yeah. And they go, what would you do with my hair? And I said, make an appointment and you'll find out.
Yeah. For sure.
You know, because we are accessible and people think we're cheap and we're free.
Yep.
But we've done that to ourselves.
Yeah.
But as a brand, you know, like one of the things is tiered pricing and it's a wise decision. Mm-hmm. You know, I've watched many brands over the years that have completely halted on hiring. And like, I give a real life example. We opened our Lisburn Road store and we had conversations that were like, we're not going to have juniors, you know, we're going to be just a high end salon. We're going to continue to put our price up and so on and so forth. But then, you know, juniors, trainees are the lifeblood of your business. They are the heartbeat of every salon.
I agree.
They are the people that should be meeting and greeting, should be learning, like building their characteristics and mannerisms. As Paul touched on before we went live, was that proud moment of when you can pass a real good client to a junior who's turned into an incredible stylist. Mm. That's pure. That's what this industry is. And like for Paul to have taken those juniors through from the very start to now they're on the shop floor.
And there's no craft I can think of that doesn't have support teams.
People say all the time, they get stressed out about, you know, you train somebody for 3 years and they leave you. As if all they were doing for 3 years was standing around watching you grind out haircuts.
Good job, yeah.
You know, they've been working, the shampooing, running around, selling product, cleaning up. They're standing there, training, don't start me. For 3 years, even if they
you've
leave,
got your money's worth, yeah.
You've got your money's worth.
Yeah.
Give them a break.
And if you didn't get an ROI, why it's your fault.
You know, if they've decided that their future isn't for them in this salon, for whatever reason, you thank them, you wish them all the best, and you say, I really appreciate the time you spent with us. Over the last 30 years, we've had about 250 staff. Mm. In the majority of them, when I meet them, it's usually a hug and a big, and most people have good memories. Isn't that what you want?
But Paul, that's integrity. You know, like this is what we're, what I'm looking for as a brand. And, you know, when I've got business partners and I hope to have many more and I hope to build even more leaders, and integrity is the foundation of it all. Everybody, pretty much everybody within the region of one or two that I've ever had, and I've trained some incredible barbers that have went on to do great things. I meet them and I know that I done everything right on my end, right? I can go to bed and sleep at night.
And also knowing when you haven't done everything right.
Absolutely.
You know, for me, yeah. There have been people who I've just...
I've got many days of those.
Well, of course. You know, there have been people who I've just lost the love with, and I've just thought, you know, something... there's just some people you just don't get on with. Yeah. And, you know, it's not that you want, you know, it's not that you want anything. There's no ill will. It's just we just didn't connect. I mean, I there's one particular guy who worked for me, and we just didn't, you know, he worked, he did great work. He was a great haircutter, but we just didn't get on. And, you know, in the end of it, we just had to say, look, let's not make this any worse for each other.
Yeah. But then, you know, like being conscious and aware is important. Just to add to that, I've done many things wrong, but being able to go back down the line and extend the arm and connect, reconnect with them. And, you know, that's a nice way to leave it.
Yeah.
You know, and that comes back to me is like that feeling is the barbershop.
But you know, it's an unusual approach.
Yeah.
I mean, generally, generally it's disgruntledness, disappointment, anger, frustration. Look, Anthony, and get past that
We said earlier, when somebody leaves, it's like a bereavement. You know, I mean, when someone's been with you 10 or 15 years, you've done loads of things with them, really good things. You want a little bit of time just to be able to sit down with them and say, okay, you're leaving. How can we manage this? Let's manage it. That would be the ideal thing. Yeah. Now, there is a fear factor on their part. They maybe don't have all their chickens lined up. So they don't want to run the risk that they're either going to be out of work or they're going to be, I get it, 100%. But the way I tend to leave it, I always say, okay, you're going. What I'd like you to do for me personally is try to remember all the good times. Let's focus on all the great times we had together, because when all the dust settles down and you've let your fireworks off and everybody's given you all your Facebook congratulations, it will actually come down to what we shared, not what we have separated. And most cases people go, okay, I get it. Yeah. You know, I understand.
That's a really nice way to look at it.
It's because the 10 or 15 years of having a relationship with somebody who's literally, you know, you've had your arms around them, you've sat in frigging buses with, you've traveled across the Atlantic. You want to sit and go, we had great times.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking of individuals who I've been with people who've told me their marriage is breaking down. They've told me they're having their first baby. You know, they've told me they're gay. You know, these are life experiences. Yeah. I felt very privileged to have been part of their life that they could tell me. So let's not ruin it by the fact that you're deciding to do your own thing. Because
I mean, lovely if you can. I've certainly, there have been people that have been in my industry, in my companies, that I have never, who have left and we haven't spoken again. And I always think those are real wasted and real shame that's where you go. And I definitely try and look back as, there was some, the really good bits of it. Why would you have stayed in the company for 5, 10, 15, 20 years if it was that terrible, you know? And I think that's a good, but we're seeing now so many, I mean, that you're saying about the event yesterday that I saw you at, there's so many younger barbers quite early in their career jumping and opening up stores. And, you know, I opened my first store, I was like 21, 22, very young. But it was unusual when I did it.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's definitely not. Me saying I had my first store at 22, sometimes I sound like quite an old git compared to the age people are doing it at. Yeah, but I do concern that, and certainly the feedback I get from here is maybe they're making that next step for the wrong reasons or they're not prepared for it. Or, you know, it just feels like a really scary time. And I think even for me, it's a long time ago, but it is scary, that beginning point of being an owner.
Isn't that what we were saying was the entrepreneurial myth? Mm. You know, clientele. We think of the young barber, the young stylist that gets really good at what they're doing. And family members, clientele suggest, you should go and open up your own salon. Not realizing that it may, probably more often than not, is a disservice to that person. Mm. It kills their creativity from a creative standpoint. Mm. So you've just taken the life out of that person. Then the entrepreneurial myth is when you don't transition properly from being a stylist or barber to a business owner, and going in and studying as hard as you did when you were in college to learn how to cut, colour, and so on. Mm. So then what we have is incompetent salon owners, which, you know, it's easy to drive revenue. What do? We lean into time, show up, do a really, really good job, which, you know, our industry is great at. But then at some point, the business owner will realise, this fucking thing's not working for me. This is not what I got into this for. Mm. And I think everybody listening to this will have resonated at some point. And if you haven't, mic drop moment, it's coming, that it needs to be a business. It needs to make money. It needs to spit off profit. As a business owner, you have to have flexibility and time to spend outside of the salon working on the salon. And you can't do that. I play golf. You can't do that, spend it on the golf course or on holidays. Those things are super important to get away.
But it can also be quite career curbing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I opened up mine at 22. I left Knightsbridge Stores, where I was, you know, part of the kind of fashion team, and work in London Fashion Week and going out to kind of Paris and Milan and doing all this. And all of a sudden I was in my building.
But Anthony,
and it took 4 or 5 years to kind of go, right, and then to look back out and go, right, can I get back into doing the other bits? It's a full-time job owning.
I near lost the whole company at a point when I was this barber, right, and I'd made a decent name for myself, reputation, both clientele and in the UK for education. And I built one salon, then I went on and built a second salon, and then I was like, this is great. But I completely lost my identity. Was I a barber? Was I a salon owner? And it wasn't until I went through those tough times and I went back in and established who I actually was and what I was trying to do from a brand standpoint, to the point of where I can stand and tell any of my staff that if I'm in the salon, I'm doing a disservice to your future. Because for a long time, a lot of salon owners are hiding behind the fact that they're at home when they're working on the business. And they'll come up with some bullshit excuse of what they're doing because they don't want the staff who they come up through the ranks with, and they kind of got this brotherly, sisterly feel that are you working today? Mm. You know, do you ever get that? Mm-hmm. Are you off today? Mm. Like, I fucking start when I wake up and I stop when I go to sleep. I have moments in between where I've time with my kids and family and I actively try and zone out. But it's being in business is relentless.
It doesn't give you, you know, we heard kind of from COVID, the amount of people that started working at home, and now people have got in their contracts that, you know, they can turn off their computers, they shut down their email. As a business owner, I've never done that. You know, I'm on 24 hours a day. There's still a text that'll come through about 11:30 that someone's got problems or a concern or something's happened, or I'd suddenly jump up in the middle of dinner and think, well, that's tomorrow. Shit.
I think it's how's important. It
there's always something that disrupts your day. And it does. It is difficult to get away from it. I
mean, you know, because of social media, we're all accessible. So we're now literally at the end of every Instagram private DM or WhatsApp DM, whatever. You know, I mean, I get it all the time. We all do. Going back to your original young people going, if some young kid wants to walk down the Lisburn Road today and open up a bricks and mortar salon and put their name above the door, they've got 100%.
Yeah.
My support from me. I'm going to be the first person down there and shake their hand. I have no problem with it. And I believe that they're entitled to do it as well. I think, you know, the problem that I feel for most young people when they do that is, why are they doing it? That it wouldn't be, of course you should do it. You could do it. Why not do it? But it's, why are you doing it? What do you want from this? You know, do you want your name above the door, or do you actually want to run this as a business? Because if you want to make money and you want to be successful, you don't need this. Mm. That this is a myth, right? This, because if this is only going to be you in a building and you can't see beyond that, that's all it's going to be.
Yeah.
For me, opening a salon was always about getting like-minded people together and seeing how we could build it. It was always a building process. Now, I was very lucky. I had an amazing hairdresser for a wife who not only had a different business sense to me, but also had great client awareness. She was the nuts and bolts of actually how we can make this work systematically and in real terms commercially, because I was a fantasist and, and I wanted to be Trevor Sorby, where she was like, no, we need to be bread and butter. So that was the main thing. I think that's the problem with a lot of young people who open salons. They want to be a salon owner and they don't want to do the shed out the back. But in actual fact, they would be better off doing the shed out the back than doing the Lisburn Road or Bond Street or, you know, Shoreditch High Street.
Yeah.
Because actually, unless that's got a real plan, as Neil said, something that you're actually going to grow, it's dangerous.
You know, I obviously work online with a lot of salon owners, and one of the big things we do early is establish the purpose, cause, or belief of the business. You know, that is what you have to come back down to. And if you can't foresee the future, we do an exercise where we basically get into a spaceship, zoom 5-10 years out into the future and come back. That's our mission as a salon owner, is to continuously evolve this thing. You know, so like coming back with a proper purpose will fuel you. That will give you the reason, Paul, you said you love coming back now to the salon, living for that Saturday buzz. It's a proper stylist.
But I think you can forget, you know, certainly, you know, I've been doing it a long time as yourself, and you know, I've been through recession. We all went through COVID. It does give you a moment to kind of step back and look at it and kind of remember, what was I doing this for? What are the bits that I like about it? That you can, you know, when I shut down my big store, we opened up a very small 4-chair boutique store, and I fell back in love with the craft, if you like, and doing that. You get that opportunity as an owner. You do have the steering wheel.
Well, we called our big salon in Great Victoria Street the Titanic. We know what happened to that. and we said, this is a battleship. This sounds a battleship. It's been through everything. We opened it during the recession. We've had the pandemic. We've had huge waves of staff come and go. And yet, with all of the bruises and the busted bits and the little damp corners that I've just noticed, you know, it sustains everything. But I think it's because, you know, you said something about steering the ship. We steer this ship well. You know, my empire building days are gone. I mean, I really admire you, Neil, for, you know, particularly a place as small as Northern Ireland to expand brilliantly, and also very, it's very astute how you've done it by taking on partners and the areas you're focused on, because that's important.
Yeah.
For me, you know, it is about building teams. It is about, you know, bringing the next generation in. Seeing my two daughters work in the salon is hugely rewarding.
Yeah.
My daughter, Joni, my oldest daughter, who runs the salon, I mean, she has made it a family business.
Yeah, beautiful.
You know, and Lisa loves hairdressing. I love the industry. I'll never not love it. It's been so good to me. It's made my dreams come true. But I realize now I am so disconnected from it.
Yeah.
So disconnected from it. If you want to talk about things like BHA, this other thing that drives the industry that, you know, requires you to turn up and smile, I'm not part of that.
No. But, you know, we've certainly, before we wrap up this first part, you know, the fact is that there are shops shutting all over the country and all over the world.
Just on that, Anthony, you know, when Paul was speaking and hearing that transition, it consciously happened probably through the challenge of the Titanic to hear. When I speak to salon owners who are struggling, a lot of them have never sat down, and it's touching on barbershops and salons closing, sat down to put a strategy in place as a business owner. So when they look at it and there's a big uproar about VAT, there's a big uproar about tax. So we look at the strategy and the model is wrong. Have you went and leased a unit that you can't afford? When you went to lease a unit, did you forecast planning financially? How many staff members, at what price, all of the expenses in? And inherently, the answer is no in the industry. They're like, salon, really busy stylist in an incredible salon. Somebody whispers in your ear, you should go and open up yourself. Fuck it. I go and do it, right? I open it up. I steal two or three of the staff from the salon I was in. Great. We've created the fireworks. And then all of a sudden, one of those guys decide to go and do it themselves, and you're left going, I'm sitting here with 40K in the hole before I even put a light on.
It's the old, you know, it goes back to, you know, if you've had an affair and you're having an affair with somebody else, they'll know you've had an affair, and what's to stop them from having an affair in the future? Because at the end of the day, you've taught them that it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing I think about all this, because you have to laugh about it. Salons are closing, and there's a good reason for it. Let's be honest. Keir Starmer and his bunch of friendly, whatever they are, they have made it almost to the point where our enthusiasm and motivation has been stripped.
Yeah.
But it's not going to change.
No.
He's not going to suddenly walk it back and go, all the poor little hairdressers and barbers. That's not going to happen. So we either have to find a new way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or we call it quits. Either way is commendable. If you're deciding to find a new way, good luck. If you decide to call it quits, we wish you all the best. Because these things don't go backwards. Mm. And we have to accept that if you want to be part of this industry moving forward, you have to change the model in a way that actually makes it feasible for you. This is not a charity. I'm not coming in here to cut hair for the benefit of the great women at BT9. Mm. I come here to do my job the best I can with a team of people who not only I admire and respect and love, and hopefully they feel the same about me, but also because it's a business where we employ people and we're giving people careers. Now, if Keir Starmer could see that, he might realise how important we are. In the meantime, we can't rely on him.
No.
So we have to rely on each other and ourselves. This industry is in fear. It's eating itself because we keep telling our industry players different stories all the time. We need to be freelancer. We need to be self-employed. We need to be this. We need to be that. Let's just all focus on whatever you choose works. Because if you want to be a salon owner that employs 40 or 50 people, it's still doable.
Mm. I am very fortunate in this sense where I come from a very small, beautiful seaside town. And for me, there's very little shops, stores on the high street that inspire me. Mm. So if I've got a 13-year-old and a 5-year-old son that I want, you know, there's the great saying of it doesn't take two parents to raise a child, it takes a village. Mm. So if my children aren't with me more than they are, I want there to be places of inspiration. I want the barbershop to be that. That's what I choose to see in this industry.
And that, that's Neil, is a really important thing. That's actually something we should come to because these are not just places where people come to hang out between the hours of darkness.
No.
What I learned from working there, I left school, not particularly academic. I had an interest in English, art and history. But I knew about Henry VIII, a little bit about Michelangelo, and I think I'd read a couple of books by Robert Louis Stevenson. That was it. Everything I've learned has been on the salon floor, listening to great people, hearing great music, reading great book recommendations, and I've travelled the world.
Mm.
And you know something? That isn't exclusive to me. That is unique to this industry for every individual who steps into it. But you're not going to be able to do it by either doing fade bursts, balayage, or bouncy, beachy blue dries.
I think that sounds like the end of part one. Thank you very much, boys. Great to hear from you. I've got a real urge to give your last statement a round of applause, Paul, if I'm very honest. Guys, I think we've heard that it is worth it. If you are struggling and it is tough, maybe you need to sit down and stop and actually look at your books, look at what you set up. Was it doomed to start with? Was that not your fault? Or have you just fucked it up? And there's nothing wrong with holding your hands up and go, I fucked this up. And the amazing thing I've found, and I'm sure you have, Paul, if you put your hand up, there are people that will help you. There are people out there that can have a look at your company, and there are people up there that will dust you down and go again. We've been the Noble Barber Podcast. This is part one. See you for a very exciting part two.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.